It is 11:30 a.m. on a Wednesday. That means it's time for a noise here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Luke Mead here at the helm. Just had a couple of Mennonites staring at me through the window. I think that's a good sign. Coming up in the next hour and a half, lots of new stuff. We have something brand new from the SYR record label. That, of course, is Sonic Youth's more experimental side, featuring them at the Roskilde Festival in 2005 with Matt Skufsason and Merzbow. We'll get to that a little bit later. We have the new Oneida here. We have some serious, serious psych from Japan from 1971 for you. But we're going to start off with, in case you've been living on Mars in a cave under a rock with your eyes closed and your fingers jammed in your ears, you know that Mr. Isaac Hayes passed away Sunday. Dead of a stroke. And no, Scientology had nothing to do with it, despite my better judgment. So we're going to listen to... I'm a huge Isaac fan. I was almost on borderline diseased with buying his records about 15 years ago. I love his stuff. However, his stuff doesn't really fit into the format of this show, but I do have kind of a cool cut-up from Canada all the way back to 1991 in the form of Sucking Chest Wound, where they utilize Isaac Hayes' wonderful groove line from the Joy song, and featuring a lot of really cool samples. So we'll be back to talk to you in about 7 minutes. This is Sucking Chest Wound on a Noise.
Just another story suppressed by the liars and whores of the press.
It was the KGB.
Wasn't there some sort of Bulgarian connection?
The Soviets and him arranged it all in Bulgaria.
Yeah, I saw it on TV. The Russians were behind the whole thing.
Well, I'm not sure, but I think the Soviets trained, or maybe programmed that guy, whatever his name is.
Who shot the Pope?
Mehmet Ali Aja.
Who shot the Pope?
Mehmet Ali Aja.
Aja was a member of the Grey Wolves in Turkey. The Grey Wolves were a large group of young terrorists with ultra-right fascist ideology. Their political affiliates, the Nationalist Action Party, became very powerful in Turkey throughout the 70s.
By 71, the Grey Wolves were a dominant force in schools and universities, beating or killing their political opponents, which allowed the NAP to gain control over the Ministry of Education.
They also had control of the customs ministry and used it to smuggle vast amounts of arms and drugs for large profits.
Who shot the Pope?
Who shot the Pope?
Who shot the Pope?
Who shot the Pope?
By 1975, street violence carried out by the Grey Wolves was a daily occurrence.
In 1979, Aja was arrested for assassinating one of Turkey's most prominent newspaper editors.
Months after, he was smuggled out of prison by Grey Wolves.
One of the first things he did after getting out was to send a letter to the leading Turkish newspaper threatening to kill the Pope.
The Pope was warned that there may be an attempt on his life.
2 years later, he was on his way to Rome to carry out his intentions, helped every step of the way by the Grey Wolves Network.
Already, the Pope has received two death threats. There were secret negotiations with several governments to ensure his security.
May 13, 1981, Mehmet Ali Aja shot Pope John Paul II in Trafalgar Square, seriously wounding him.
The Italian police had abundant evidence implicating the Grey Wolves in the shooting.
But little of this evidence was presented in the trials.
Why?
Who shot the Pope?
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 In the Rush first trial in 1981, Aja claimed he was an independent international terrorist without any ideology.
The trial concluded that an unknown shadowy force was behind the conspiracy, despite the great amount of evidence pointing to the Grey Wolves.
6 months after the first trial, Aja began, little by little, to bring the Bulgarians into the story.
It's
September 82, Reader's Digest published the story The Plot to Kill the Pope, written by Clara Sterling, claiming that the shooting was instigated by the Bulgarian secret services who were controlled by the KGB.
In November, Aja stated that several Bulgarians living in Rome helped him with the shooting, and that it was originally planned while he was in Bulgaria in the summer of 1980.
Western media picked up on this and made immediate headline news and continued to give the Bulgarian connection prominent news coverage for the next 4 years.
The Reagan administration in the United States had claimed from the beginning the Soviets were behind it, of course in keeping with their claim that the Soviets were behind all international terrorism.
This all was terribly convenient for the U.S. administration, who used this as another reason for the huge military buildup.
Claire Sterling, Michael Levine, and Paul Hens were the main fabricators of the Bulgarian connection for the Western Union.
Now, Michael Levine is, of course, along with Claire Sterling, one of the primary disseminators of the Bulgarian thesis.
Paul Hens, another cited expert in this case, was at one time the CIA station chief in Turkey.
Most of the people who are involved with the Bulgarian thesis and who have been pushing it so hard are not, by any means, real journalists in the normal sense. Both Claire Sterling and Michael Levine have worked on behalf of Western intelligence, in some cases actually breaking the laws of Italy to support the right wing there.
The New York Times, the Christian Science Monitor, the McNeil Lehrer Hour, and the NBC Nightly News unquestioningly towed this party line and turned to these three as experts in the field of terrorism.
And of course, the rest of the media followed suit.
What the press didn't say was that these three had long histories of working for the CIA and its disinformation service.
The mass media would never mention any of this. Why?
Aja shifted his story so many times and in so many directions, it was difficult to keep up.
Why did Aja change his testimony so often?
Aja was coached to implicate the Bulgarians while in jail by prison wardens, intelligence officers, and Vatican officials, all members of the P2 Lodge.
P2
Lodge, an illegal branch of the Masonic Lodge, developed into a state within a state, including many of the most powerful and influential in Italy.
The P2's interest in blaming the Soviets was primarily to discredit the left in Italy.
P2 Lodge.
So Aja played along, gaining himself more attention in the courts and in the media.
Who shot the Pope?
Who shot the Pope?
Who shot the Pope?
Mehmet Ali Aja.
Finally, 5 years after the assassination attempt, the jury had to acquit the Bulgarians for lack of evidence.
Will the media print an apology for misleading the public?
Of course not.
The big lie has been so effectively spread that's what most people think of. Oh yeah, the Bulgarians tried to kill him on behalf of the KGB.
What are you trying to get at?
Turn off the TV.
Turn off your radio.
Burn the newspaper.
Well, I agree with about 2 out of 3 of those last statements. Yes, burn the newspaper and turn off the TV, but don't turn off the radio because what you've got on it right now is CITR 101.9 FM, a noise here. And you just heard Sucking Chest Wound from Toronto, Canada, all the way back to 1991 with Who Shot the Pope? Of course, looping Isaac Hayes' wonderful Joy backbeat. And, Isaac Dion doesn't film with Joy at all, actually. Rest in peace, my man. And, too bad. Sucking Chest Wound comes to you on the now sadly defunct Death of Vinyl Entertainment Incorporated label, 2 Bloor Street West. Don't bother looking for it. It doesn't exist anymore, but they used to be a fantastic label featuring a lot of industrial artists trying to really bring into a lot of Canadian industrial scenes, kind of terrible bands like Digital Poodle and Din and all those kind of things, but they did deal with a lot of Universal artists as well, such as Zovia France and Steinsky, the Tape Beatles, producers from Bob, I don't know if you remember them, but Bob Dobbs, great audio terrorist. Check it out. I'm sure there's a lot you can find in a lot of used CD sections and stuff like that, but the second that you see the little Dove Entertainment stamp of approval on it, you should pick it up, definitely. We're going to move into some psychedelic territory now. It's a hot day out, and I always like my heavy, heavy, heavy psych. This is coming to you from 1971. Oh boy, this is the heaviest thing I've heard in a really long time. Influenced by Blue Cheer and the Velvet Underground, who you'll hear in this set as well. Covered by Superconductor, who you'll hear in this set as well. All the way from Japan, 1971. Get ready, here it comes. This is the Flower Traveling Band.
We'll be right back. I ran for hours with a man named William. Says never understood a word from me. Oh, I know she cares about me. I could have called my name and worked it in now. I said it, she's a long day gone.
Velvet Underground there with I Heard Her Call My Name off of the legendary White Light, White Heat record. And kind of a big influence on that set, actually, of just freeform, freak out noise guitar. We started off with something brand new reissued and in limited quantities reissued, the Flower Traveling Band with their second release, but the best known one, Satori. Originally released on Atlantic Records in Japan only in 1971, met with a fairly tepid response from the Japanese audience, but in America, they wound up getting on a bill with Emerson, Lake & Palmer, and of all Canadian bands, get this, they went on tour with Lighthouse, and which actually got them to record a follow-up record on Vancouver Island, of all places, yet the band's roadie, the female roadie, rewrote all their lyrics in English, and they recorded it in Vancouver on the Vancouver Island in English. But they called the record "Made in Japan." So I hope the irony's not lost on you there. But 5 songs on this record. The album's called Satori. Every song is called Satori. Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, Part 4, Part 5. You heard Part 1 there, covered by Vancouver's own Superconductor, who you heard in that set there off of Hit Songs for Girls with I'm Gonna Knock Your Block Off All Star and Feed Back in. Superconductor covered Satori Part 1 by the Flower Traveling Band on their first EP, Heavy with Puppy. And much to my surprise and chagrin, the Flower Traveling Band are not credited, which is kind of unusual if you ask me, but it just proves that, you know, 10 dudes from Vancouver with insane record collections can unearth some serious heavy classics. By the way, Superconductor's cover of Satori is bloody remarkable, so check that out. I'm sure it's at Scratch for some reason. You're listening to A Noise here on CITR 101.9, 11:59 in the AM. And we're going to move into a lengthier piece here, something brand new by your friends of mine, Sonic Youth. Something out on their own SYR label. And the SYR label is always really challenging. And this one is no exception. Sonic Youth Med, Mats Gustafsson, Og Mersbau. This is at a festival in Sweden. The 2000 Roskilde, my Swedish is terrible, I'm sorry. But Roskilde Festival it's in Denmark, what a fool. This show was originally billed as the other side of Sonic Youth. And for this special event, the Japanese laptop noisemonger Masami Akita, better known as Mersbau, and Swedish free jazz saxophonist Mats Gustafsson joined the five-piece Sonic Youth. 1 hour of improvised music was divided into five-minute intervals, and participants joined and exited during each interval. We're going to hear a bit of a lengthy track. I can't play the full hour because that would take up the whole show. But this is brand new. Sonic Youth, Mats Gustafsson, and Mersbau. Thank you. Sonic Youth with Mats Gustafsson and Mersbo at the Roskilde Festival. Nailed it. I had to look up the pronunciation, but yes, in Denmark, 1st of July 2005, available on Sonic Youth Records. That's their eighth in their ongoing editions of their crazier, experimentaler side. You're listening to A Noise here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. As always, let's see what's going on at Fake Jazz Thursdays. We have this week, all the way from Portland, Oregon, an artist by the name of Syrup. That's always good when people from the States try to come up. It's they sometimes make it in, they sometimes don't, but it's always cool when they do. We have Basement Lizard, Assertion. My goodness, if that's the assertion that I think it is, you're in for a treat. Very old school kind of bent art guitar noise. And then Max Alexander. That is Fake Jazz Wednesdays every Wednesday at the Cobalt Hotel in lovely, lovely Main Street, East Vancouver. And yeah, go out and support your local noise scene. Anywho. Well, coming up, I've got a feeling the show is going to be kind of samey, actually, because we've got something brand new by Oneida. And then my selection for the Nurse List is fairly lengthy and jammy as well. So we'll get back to the noise right after these massages.
We're at 8,000 feet, perishing cold, and I'm bored stiff. What about putting on a hot gramophone record to cheer me up?
Hello? Hello? Is this Harlem 77711?
Hello, fellas. This is Duke Ellington.
Ah, get it. Pause. Let's get sweet and hot.
In the opinion of hot music critics, Count Basie has one of the best dance orchestras in the country.
King of the clarinet, Artie Shaw, and his orchestra making dance history in the Blue Room of the Hotel Lincoln in New York City.
Every Thursday from 10 till noon, join me, your host, Charles Burnham, for Sweet and Hot, a celebration of the 78 RPM record, a three-minute masterpiece in the golden age of North American songwriting. Hot jazz, swing, and popular music from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. That's every Thursday from 10 till noon here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Did you enjoy that blue bottle?
That's a swill record. I must get it. What's his number?
Yes, indeed. The best way to wake up on a Thursday morning, Mr. Charles Burnham, with the Sweet and Hot 78 High Fidelity at its finest. Stay tuned from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. You've got the Afternoon Yak, the Green Majority, and Democracy Now. 3 o'clock, Rumbletone Radio, Agogo. 5 o'clock, Canadian Voices. 6:30 is Sam Squatch's Hideaway, all CanCon, all the time. 8 o'clock, Folk Oasis. 10 o'clock, Juice Box with Julie and Caroline. And 11 o'clock, Mr. Hans Klaus with Hans Klaus's Misery Hour. Okay, moving into some new territory. This is the first piece of Oneida's much-anticipated Thank Your Parents triptych. Ooh, a triptych. Is this the post-prog way of saying trilogy? Triptych of releases, which will lay bare the band's colossal vision of a new age in music. That's what the sticker says. Oneida, the new one's called Preteen Weaponry. Three tracks, fairly lengthy in piece. Take a while to get going once they do. Apparently the album is supposed to be listened to in one sitting and stuff. And then when the triptych gets released, you're supposed to listen to all three of them in one sitting. But the cool thing is that it's had everybody that has been involved with Oneida in this project. So that's pretty cool. So they're digging up some old friends and stuff. And it reminds one of what maybe a live performance might sound like. And it kind of takes you back to the days of the monolithic song Sheets of Easter without the monotony or the intensity. So we're going to listen to part three of Oneida's Preteen Weaponry. We'll be back to talk to you at quarter two and with the Nurse with Wound track list.
Thank you.
Night Off of their most recent release, Pre-Teen Weaponry, part one of three albums coming out by them in the near future, out on Jag Jaguar and, of course, their own label, Brah. We're going to start the nurse list a little bit early today because we've got a lengthy piece here, and I've just been bombarded with questions about this guy for the last, I guess, a couple months now because there's just been a re-interest in him. I'm talking about Father Yod and the Yehovah 13. Father Yod, the spiritual leader, religious cult commune leader of the Source family, and the leader and the proprietor of the Source restaurant, which was in Laurel Canyon in the late 60s. Probably the first vegetarian restaurant in a major city. frequented by movie stars and hipsters alike. He had up to about 120 followers. They lived in this gorgeous mansion up in the Hollywood Hills. And get this, they had a recording studio and would jam every night from 3 to 6 a.m. in the soundproof garage. They put out a ton of records. You could only buy them at the Source restaurant, so increasing their value. But there's been this huge re-release and upsurge of interest in their music and stuff. All improvisational, all no rehearsals, no overdubs, what have you, you know. Usually only about 500 pressed or to 1,000 pressed, of course, making them sought after on places like eBay. They're just starting to be reissued. And also, it's a pretty cool book out by two former members of the Source family and stuff. And it's pretty revealing and pretty interesting. So not all positive, not all negative either. The cool thing I can say about him, Father Yod died in 1975 due to a hang gliding accident. But I am happy to say that the cult is one of the few cults in the 70s that didn't end in utter tragedy, mass suicide, blah, 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 blah. Most of the followers are still following their own spiritual path, utilizing the ways that Father Yod taught them. And the Yehovah 13 reunited last year and played at the Knitting Factory. And that was attended by, of course, people in the know. So this, of course, made the Nurse list. And we're going to hear something off of the Feather of Wisdom. Now, the thing about their albums is they're kind of hit or miss, like most improvisational music. Like, I mean, give or it's always, you know, give or take, what have you. But anyways, this is simply titled Yehovah by the Yehovah 13 on a Noise.
Thank you. Thank you.
the Yehoah 13 off of Feather of Wisdom with Yahoah. This concludes yet another edition of A Noise. Thanks for listening. You can always check us out on the podcast at www.citr.ca. And as always, this is Luke Mead signing off, saying if it doesn't annoy, it's not a noise. Bye for now.
I can do the show.
You're starting tonight.
We'll do it live! If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat, the beat, the beat.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
But a lot of these groups are nothing but pure carnality and fleshly and so forth. But
check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
You're pretty happy with the way you look and the attitude you've got, are you?
Hi, I'm Marjorie Harris, editor-at-large of Gardening Life magazine, and you're listening to The Green Majority, Canada's only environmental news hour.
Hello, it's time for your weekly dose of conservation information here on Canada's only environmental news hour. Coming to you on CIU.